This is Cave Scott Allen of OTCode.com.
This is Kevin Dente.
This is John Galloway.
This is Scott Kuhn from LazyCoder.com.
Welcome to this episode of Herding Code, being recorded on June 13th in the year 2013. We're still at NDC. We're talking to Nick Molnar, who is a web dev nerd, chef, and a co-founder of the Glimpse Project. Is that right?
You got it. That's
cool.
Me. That's me.
And so your talk today is not necessarily about Glimpse, but it's more about running an OSS project. What's it about?
So my talk today is similar to Glimpse. It's all about scratching an itch. So we've been running the Glimpse Project for 2 years now. We've had a lot of challenges and ups and downs, and I've learned a lot about managing a community-run project. And so I'm basically scratching a two-year-old itch, and I'm writing the presentation, the quick start guide that I wish I had 2 years ago. And hopefully some people can learn from the lessons that I've been kind of dragged through in the last 2 years.
So what's one big lesson that you learned?
One big lesson that I learned is how to properly communicate in a community project. So you don't want to do things in the private. The number of times that me and Anthony, who started the project with me, would hop on email or Skype and have a whole conversation and make these decisions about where we wanted to take the project, and then 2 weeks later somebody would show up and say, "Hey, why did this change? Or how did this happen?" I'm like, "Oh, we should be doing this on a public mailing list where everybody can follow along, and we don't have to retype everything. We can save our breath and our keystrokes."
So that's part of the whole, like, open source can mean several different things. Like, there's open source code, which is just code that's under an open source license, and then there's an open source project, right? And there's kind of an important distinction there.
Yeah, there really is. And, you know, that's another thing that I find that a lot of people don't pay a lot of attention to. They think, I've picked an open source license, that means that I'm open source. And they might even allow, they'll say, I use takebacks, or I take takebacks, I'll take a contribution, right? And that's great, but there's actually full governance models. And so we hear about benevolent dictator and like Linus Torvald, or we hear about the meritocratic method, or the meritocratic model. But I was floored to find out as I was doing more and more research and reading up the few open source books that are out there, that these are actually well-defined, well-documented models. And so there's an organization in the UK called OSS Watch that has the whole meritocratic model completely documented to a T, with what roles need to be filled, how decisions are made, how many people are required for a vote, how long those votes should take. And as I'm reading through this, it just kind of cleared everything up for me. Like, wow, if more projects did a good job of publicizing the actual governance model they followed, it would make things a lot simpler. And so I took some inspiration from Yahoo's YUI project. It's a JavaScript front-end library project. And they had actually taken the templates right from OSS Watch and kind of tweak them a little bit to be more specific to their project. Like, you're not going to have a blanket governance model for everybody. But it was really inspiring, and now I know exactly how I want to interact with my community. And I'm not always a guy who's running a project. I'm also a contributor to other projects, and it kind of helps me understand both sides of the coin.
And I think Glimpse is interesting, and tell me if this presents a challenge or not. I don't necessarily, if I want to contribute to Glimpse, I don't necessarily have to contribute to something that makes it into Glimpse core, right? I could have my own GitHub repository with a plugin that you guys have never heard of before, but someone could download it and it works with Glimpse. Does that present challenges for you, or is it good?
It does not present challenges for us, but with the research that I've done for this talk, we have kind of redefined what we think of as a contribution. So before, we used to say that we had plugin authors and we had contributors, and a plugin author was just somebody who used our extensibility points. And really, it's kind of taking a step back. A contributor is so much more than somebody who commits code to core. And I think it should be. So if you just happen to use our extensibility model, that's great. And I don't think that we should be punishing ourselves because we have an extensibility model. You're a contributor, even though you don't have to go through a pull request and you can directly commit, you're enhancing our community. And that is a solid contribution. And that's what a contributor should be. And so that means it doesn't have to be code. If Scott, all you did was troll the Glimpse tag on Stack Overflow and answer questions, which Darren, who's the number three user, does, and so he always beats me to Glimpse questions and picks me up. But he's a solid contributor to our community, right? People who write documentation, people who submit bug reports or ask for features and document the feature well, those are all great ways to contribute to an open source project without committing core code.
Yeah, and you had someone give you, if I remember, a 25-page, 50-page Word document of...
Yeah, Peter Handorf from Germany, wanted to practice his English, and he wrote a 27-page document user manual guide for us.
Wow.
It was awesome. That's my favorite commit.
So you're talking about some great, like, benefits or symptoms of a healthy project, right? How do you define success in an open source project?
I think that's a really personal question to the founders of the project and to the community of that project. So I would say for Glimpse specifically, we've achieved success. We wanted to help the community to be able to do diagnostics in a way that they weren't able to do it, and we feel like we're there. There still is a lot more that could be done, but at this point, we're pretty happy with how far we've got. Mm-hmm. So, you know, it depends. Some people want to be the most starred project on GitHub. Mm-hmm. That's not success to me. Success is users who are happy and are making a difference in their lives. Success is when I hear, like, the MyGit guys or the NuGit guys, both of those projects use our product, when they shoot us an email and say, hey, you really helped us today with X, Y, and Z. Mm-hmm. That's success to me, is helping the user. If I had one user, maybe I wouldn't continue on forever, but I mean, I think that's a small definition of success.
Yeah.
So you have a slide that says avoid bike shedding.
Yes.
What are you talking about?
Okay. So bike shedding is pretty funny. So bike shedding is kind of a pseudonym for Parkinson's law of triviality.
Mm.
Okay. So Parkinson is this management consultant who back in the 50s wrote a book. And in the book, he kind of dramatizes the situation where you can just imagine this on the radio with a board of directors, and the board of directors has put in front of them a plan, these huge binders of how they're going to build a power plant. And so, of course, you know, the board has a lot of decisions they have to make in building this power plant, and so they kind of leaf through the information in these binders, and they take a little while, but they approve the building of this power plant. So, you know, a few months go into the building of the project, and the construction workers come and say, hey, you know, we'd really like to build a little bike shed so we can get our bike out of the elements, keep it away from the sun and the rain. And so they put together a simple little plan for this little bike shed, and they hand it into the exact same board of directors. And the story goes that the board of directors will take a much longer time approving the bike shed than they took to approve a freaking power plant, right? And Parkinson infers that the reason is, when there's this like inverse proportionality to how complicated something is to how much conversation it will generate. Mm. So the bike shed is simple enough that everybody can figure out, well, this is how I'd build a bike shed. I can get it done in a weekend and still have time to barbecue on Sunday, right? Mm. But what color is the bike going to be? Is the shed going to be painted? Where is it going to be placed on the facilities? All of this stuff. Everybody wants to like chime in and put their 2 cents because A, it shows that they're paying attention, right? B, that you get this element of like you've left your fingerprint on the project. They're going to walk by one day with their family and be like, see that bike shed? That was me. I did that. But the big important decisions, the ones that really matter, the building of the power plant, they're like, that's a lot for me to get into. I'm going to assume that somebody else has covered these details. I'll just kind of approve.
Interesting.
Silently.
Interesting.
Yeah. So bike shedding actually really showed up in the open source community in the late 90s on the FreeBSD project.
Hmm.
A guy named Camp was on a thread. He was kind of a big name in that community, was on a thread on the FreeBSD mailing list, and he just saw this as a common problem where, like, people were sweating the small stuff, and they weren't taking care of the big problems. And so he basically sent out this epic email that explained Parkinson's law of triviality, said we should not be doing this, please focus on bigger problems, and if you see this happening in another thread, let everybody know about this. So this email actually became a whole meme in and of itself before memes was a big thing.
Wow.
And so it was put up on bikeshed.com, so you can actually still find the original email, and it's hilarious because if you refresh the page, every time you get another random color for the background because he's arguing about what color to paint the bike shed. So I just want to encourage members of the open source community to avoid bike shedding in general, and if you see it happening, just forward out that URL and make the members in your community aware of it so that we can focus on the more important problems.
Yes.
How do you think about setting long-term direction? Like, do you do a roadmap? Do you do a public roadmap? Is that important?
I definitely think it's important. Like I said, we've learned to try to be as public as possible. So when we start thinking about things, we might have some private conversations at a conference like this where we'll bump into a user or a contributor and kind of say, hey, so what do you think about X or Y? We've been thinking about this. But that is usually pretty quick and shallow conversation. But we'll get it up on our developer list. We might not touch it for months, but we'll put it on the developer list just to see what the community thinks we should be doing with it. A good example is when we released Glimpse 1.0, we had got a few requests during the beta timeframe to strong name the assemblies. And I kind of thought about it, and I said, okay, well, you know, everybody could use a strong name assembly. These guys can't. If we strong name, I think it'll be fine. And so I mentioned on the developer list, we're thinking about strong naming the assemblies. That was a bad idea.
Yeah.
I was very swiftly and strongly told, do not do that. They pointed out the whole JSON.NET example in NuGet, and I now realize that that was not a good idea. But, yeah, so, I mean, the long-term direction, we want to get community feedback as soon as possible so they can either course-correct us or pitch a better idea, and we'll go the best direction possible.
No, I find that that is key. I mean, open source project is a project. You know, overall, like, there, it's got its own nuances, but it's a project. And I found that any kind of project that when you involve the community as early as possible, like, two things happen that are both really good. One is you get that feedback, you immediately find out before it's too late, you find out if they're going to like it. And then two, you also get this kind of shared ownership, right? Where it's like, this isn't just something someone's cramming down my throat. I feel like I belong, you know, this is actually my thing, you know? And so then when it comes out, people accept it and are happy about it. Just because, you know, like, even I've had times where I was able to give input and it didn't get accepted, but I feel like I was heard.
Right.
You know what I mean?
Yeah, totally. And it's funny, like I said, the meritocratic method is this well-defined thing. Huh. All of these decisions, according to them, on, like, the base template, should be sitting for 72 hours. And if nobody says anything, then you kind of complacently agree to move forward. But that gives everybody a chance to kind of object and say, hey, I think this is a better direction we should be taking things.
Huh.
So, yeah, it's really interesting.
So you geek out on food.
I love food.
What's the last big dish that you prepared?
So the last big dish I prepared, we had Memorial Day recently in the States, and I live in New York City. And so I live in a high-rise building, and we have a rooftop deck right on the East River that overlooks the UN building. So I had a bunch of friends over, and we decided to do burgers the right way. They were very delicious. So I decided to do kind of, I had just walked through Little Italy in Manhattan, and so I was kind of feeling Italian. So I did grilled burgers with roasted garlic and Parmesan polenta fries.
Wow.
I made a sun-dried aioli, and then the burgers were topped with pancetta crisps, pickled cherry peppers, balsamic reduced onions, and basil aioli.
Wow. On
toasted garlic bread.
You sound like one of these contestants on America's Next Great Cook or something like that. have you considered one of these shows?
My wife is pushing me to do this over and over and over again. Maybe one day.
When the
ride in technology is no longer fun, I might switch over to the amazing pay world of restaurant work.
Yeah, it's funny. I know people that were professional chefs and told me they were paid well and everything and got out of it and went into IT or whatever because they're like, yeah, the work, the hours are crazy. But I love cooking too. And it's like, I think part of it, my wife hates cooking because she has to do it every day. And it's like, well, I just pop in and like, I think I'm going to cook something up.
Well,
sport.
It's funny. I always like to talk to people about this because I think there's a lot of parallels between cooking and programming. Just like you hear a lot of musicians say the same thing, right? There is a very definitive science to cooking. A lot of people don't necessarily understand that science, but there is a wrong way to do things, like there is in development, right? It doesn't compile, that's wrong. But then there's a lot of right ways of doing it, and how far you take it really depends on what you're targeting. Yeah.
There's rules you have to follow, but still be creative about it somehow.
Yeah, totally. And like you might be just writing a one-off script that you're just going to use, and that's kind of the equivalent of like busting out ramen and just getting some sustenance. Or you might be trying to write like the most elegant app ever that people just look at the source code and weep, and that might be going to like Per Se or the French Laundry or like this transcending dinner that, you know, everything is thought of down to a T.
Right.
So I kind of like that analogy a lot.
You know, one thing with that, I one time got from the local library, it was the Professional Chef's Guide to what it's like the book. It's like a 3-inch thick, like if you were going to get a degree in culinary.
Is it the one in copper binding?
Yes.
I have that book. It's from the Culinary Institute of America.
And I was fascinated reading it, and a few things. Like, one was like, oh, I just kind of stumbled on this thing. I didn't know it was a real, you know what I mean? Like, techniques and things in there. Mm. But then also, it was interesting that they start with, like, basic sanitation. And I was thinking that applies to software, too.
It's
there's things like source control and, you know, like, just basic sanitation.
Clean as you go.
Right, exactly. Right. And so those are things that are, like, fundamental, and you kind of, everyone should do this. And then later, when you learn these rules and techniques, then you can go crazy with the understanding. You know the technical background, and then you can say, I'm going to throw ginger into this, or whatever, you know?
Exactly. And chapter 2 of that book goes on to talk about food math,
uh-huh.
which completely applies because we're constantly dealing with resources and where is it memory versus disk and all this kind of stuff. And then chapter three is the kitchen brigade system, which is your team. How do you put together a team and how do you interact with the team?
It's
the exact same thing. You just get to eat when you're done.
It's fascinating seeing that the like that brings in some really old knowledge, right? It's old French, you know, the sauces, you know,
the sauces,
all those. And then, but then there's also you see that, and then you see like cutting edge Iron Chef kind of stuff, right? And but they're bringing in like the old knowledge and then the new techniques, and you kind of throw it all together, and you can go crazy.
Yeah, you know, that's interesting. I had never thought about kind of classical and then the alt.net of cooking,
right?
I'm in a sous vide, I'm going to use my smoking gun, and there's these guys that are pushing these techniques, but then you still have the people who are doing, you know, just basic architecture. Here's how you roast chicken, and it's amazing if you can do it the right way.
Yeah, and then the combination is right.
And you put the two together. Yeah.
I saw a cooking show once, and this guy was, I don't know. There was one guy, it was some sort of challenge where they had a limited amount of time to take down a chicken and cook something with it. And the one guy, like, had just skills. He, like, takes a knife and he just takes the thing down, like, in seconds, you know? And everyone else is kind of picking at it, and, you know? And then afterwards, he's like, you know, basically, like, these guys got no skills, man, you know?
Yeah.
But, I mean, it was, you know, people were all coming up with these artistic approaches, but then it's old world skill to throw in there.
There was the Uncle Bob of butchery showed
exactly.
up.
Oh man!
All right. So what's coming up for you in the future? What are you excited about? What's happening?
Oh man! So we just did a huge release of Glimpse yesterday at NDC, which was we released the heads up display,
which is beautiful, by the way.
Thank you very much. Yeah, and we changed the styling. So we kind of did three big things. We have a brand new website, which I love. I think it's way better. That was contributed by a guy named by Pete, who's in the UK.
And that's getglimpse.com.
That's getglimpse.com. Yes, thank you.
Where did you find hosting for that, if I may ask?
Oh, we use this little outfit in Redmond. They have this cloud platform called Azure. Yeah, we're using Azure websites. Yeah, there's the Microsoft guy.
Right.
No, we are using Azure websites. We have actually been very happy with it. It makes things really easy. I won't go into the implications of that in open source, but the fact that it is easy to deploy makes it really easy for us to get contributions to the website. And we've actually seen, not just because of Azure websites, but that plus some other changes we've made, we've had about a threefold increase in documentation contributions.
Wow.
Because we've been able to make it so easy for people to just kind of like click the button.
Like Git push deploy kind of stuff or different?
Yeah, we're doing that, and we're using GitHub Wiki as a sub-repository to our Glimpse Azure websites, which means that they don't have to deal with pull requests, they don't have to deal with a Git client if they're unfamiliar with that. They just type some markdown into a browser, and it can show up on our website.
Oh, wow.
So it's pretty powerful. But yeah, so HUD, we restyled it. It has kind of a the look formerly known as Metro.
Yeah, but I have to say, Anthony gave me a preview a little while ago, and just the typography and the design is just gorgeous. I mean, when you bring it up, you feel like you're all of a sudden at a NASA control center, and you're watching a rocket launch, and oh my god, that turned red, gotta do something.
Yeah, Anthony deserves a lot of credit for that. He was really championing the style redesign. He put a lot of blood, sweat, and tears into making it as beautiful as it is. I like UI. I actually went to school for digital media and had to do a lot of UI type work, but he is way more passionate about it than me. I want something that works. So a lot of credit for Anthony for the new...
But it's beautiful, but I mean, all the information that you need is still there. It's a lot of great diagnostics.
Yeah, and you can get it really quick. We found that people would like Glimpse, but not necessarily know, like, this is all great information. Now, what do I need to know? Like, which ones really matter to me? And so just distilling it down and boiling it down to the essence. That's good. I had to use boiling it down to tie in the cooking theme.
Right. So, completely unrelated, but I'm remembering from the last time we talked, one thing that we covered was semantic versioning. Just curious if anything's new with that.
So, semantic versioning hasn't had a whole lot happen with it. We've had a couple of revs to the specification. I think we're at 0.5 now. So we're getting feedback from the community. We're not getting a ton, but between getting ready for our NDC talks and getting heads up display out, we've kind of, that one's been on the back burner.
Okay.
We're looking forward to picking that up a little bit more after leaving this conference. And then we have Monkey Space in Chicago coming up that we'll be speaking at. So getting ready for that.
So what's next for Glimpse?
It's a good question. So I think we need to put it out to a vote. Now that I'm going to be talking about governance model, I need to practice what I preach.
Yeah.
I think the community right now is going to say that we need to get Web API support up and running.
Mm.
So we made a lot of changes in the architecture to Glimpse and 1.0 to be able to support that. And so the abstraction is there. We just need to put the implementation on top of it now. And so we've actually been working already a little bit with Daryl Miller, who's a freaking genius up in Montreal.
Yeah.
And he's been doing some spikes on the side to get Glimpse running up on self-hosted web API.
Hmm.
And so we're pretty darn close to having that. I don't know if it's production-ready code yet, but you know we'll continue to work with him and other members of that community to get it going.
Very cool. Well, any last words?
Yeah, I'm calling out Kevin Dente. This is the third time on the show, and I don't think this guy exists. I know there's like a Double Dragon avatar out there, but come on, show your face.
All right, well, thank you for being on the show.
Yeah, thanks for having me, guys. I really appreciate it.
And thanks for listening, everyone.
Bye.